It's time once again for another episode of All That's Jazz, the podcast that explores everything in the world of jazz. And here now is your host, Alan Scott.
In staying true to our mission and presenting you with conversations and the backstory about all that is jazz, today we feature a venue which provides live music performances in the Golden Gate City of San Francisco. This jazz club is called Mr. Tipples. This highly acclaimed and popular establishment is lovingly directed and run by its founder, an impresario and maven named Jay Bortolo. I call him a maven as he epitomizes the definition of the word, which is someone who is dazzlingly skilled in any field. Bortolo has a BA in music performance from the University of Michigan, but like many proverbial starving artists, he found a way to earn a living by working in the restaurant business. As it turned out, he was able to hone his skills and experience along with developing a leadership style that led him to opening two restaurants in the city by the bay. His heart and soul, however, brought him full circle, and he eventually answered the siren call of music to return to his passion, which guided him to open Mr. Tipples Jazz Club. And he has never looked back. I invite you now to listen to this story about Jay Bortolo and Mr. Tipples. Let's talk a little bit about yourself. I know you are the owner and creator and pretty much the mastermind behind Mr. Tipples.
It either makes me responsible or in trouble. Yes.
Well, that's true too. So you can't hide behind the wall there. You're unfortunately out there in front.
Indeed.
You used to be associated with the Maven restaurant, and I think another restaurant was Cadence, but those are both gone by the wayside.
True. Those were the first restaurants I opened up here in San Francisco. Mr. Tipples was attached to Cadence. They were kind of a pair. They got opened up at the same time. And we quickly saw Cadence walked in the room the first day, and I was like, there's got some problems here that I don't know if I'm going to be able to solve. Mm-hmm. The flip side, when walking into Tipples for the first day, is like, there's a lot of things we need to solve, but I think they're solvable. Fast forward 9 years, Tipples is still here, strong and full and great. The Cadence space has been three different restaurants and is currently vacant. And then you're right, Maven was the first restaurant opened up 14 years ago now and had a good run for a decade or so.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned the fact that when you walked into Tipples, there was a sensory or emotional experience, et cetera. And sometimes, you know, you just have that right setting and you know it's going to work. It's like people that are shopping for a home. When you walk in to some places, it's like, let's go to the next one. And then all of a sudden it's like, wow, this feels like home.
Indeed. There's, for lack of a better term, the je ne sais quoi of that feeling and that vibe of, sometimes you can name it and you can see it, and other times it's just the feeling. And I think, as we were talking before a little bit about business and external factors, sometimes it's just being able to be aware of that feeling and then go with it. And you're sure, as you're buying that house that you just feel is right, sometimes you need to renovate the bathroom, but sometimes it all just settles into place.
So was it you, or did you hire someone in terms of interior design to create the atmosphere for Tipples?
We did have an interior designer and a construction company to help build up the space. It was a raw space when we took it over. Construction was a nightmare, as construction often is. And then since then, it's been a lot of iteration, a lot of small decisions, a lot of what's working, what's not working, and then solving the next available problem in terms of time, bandwidth, and dollars, and urgency. And that's been, again, small steps along the way. We're on our third sound system, second stage, fourth piano, second lounge area. We've replaced the chairs in here three times. So it's kind of a bunch of very small iterations that don't need to happen all at the same time. but is realizing as we are growing in the space is growing with us as well.
With respect to yourself, in terms of image, et cetera, there was a projection, at least on some of the website, about Mr. Tipples specifically, that seemed to have a note of Great Britain involved with it. And of course, tipple is a word that's very common or prevalent in the British Isles about a drink or one's drinking habits, et cetera. Was that intended? Because I started thinking that maybe at first that you were a Brit by heritage, and that's not the case. You're actually an American.
Yes. Diving into tipples, it was a way to make the name imply, for lack of a better term, Mr. Cocktail, a way to make a persona, call it Mr. Cocktail, but without actually using the word cocktail. What's a further reach, a further word out of the common vernacular? And we settled on tipples, and it both also captured fun, a slightly silly name, and that was a good dichotomy of, it's kind of fun to say, it's silly, but when you come in here, it's also serious without being pretentious. It's focused and doesn't take itself too serious. There is a mix of attitudes here, and I think that is captured within the term Mr. Tipples. It's the formal prefix, but then a silly word.
Right, but it makes sense. It not only displays the fact that you're serious at what you do, but there's whimsy connected with it. And I think that's an attraction for a consumer to say, hey, this is the place to go. If you want to have some great cocktails, hear some great music, and have some really great food, this is the place.
Indeed, a big thing that we take away from this is that ultimate guest feeling at the end of the night of like, that was just a good time. Mm-hmm. That none of the individual components need to be the best in the world. They just all need to be really good. And sum them all together with a nice staff in a good space, like, it just becomes a very fun night and a repeatable night and an easy night. It doesn't need to be a once-a-year celebration of extravagance. It can be a once-a-week night out and realizing if life is this good all the time, fantastic.
So what about yourself? What's the better assessment or description of you? Is it that you are a person with a food and beverage background that moved into the music world and a music venue, or you're somebody coming out of music world, jumped into food and beverage, and now you're running a jazz club?
Full circle. Started off in the music world, went to conservatory, trained as a classical percussionist, moved to the big city to start taking auditions. Being a young kid and needing to pay rent, started working in waiting tables in the restaurant career. And then that took off faster than the music career. But the beauty of music is it never leaves one's soul or one's ears or one's mind. It's always there. And starting to make, having a successful restaurant career, opening a few restaurants, and then needing to add a bit of spice to what is now basically a weird side street speakeasy, adding music was an easy add for me, knowing that have ears, have a understanding, can engage with musicians. So it was an easy way to come full circle. And then speaking a little bit more about how Tipples has grown up, the more that we've leaned into the music, the more the audience in the room has responded positively. So that's been a fantastic thing of not having direct venue experience. I was able to gain that over the first 5 years of operations as we learned and the audience learned and the musicians learned. The whole thing grew organically together.
Well, what about the leaning toward the jazz genre? You studied music yourself, and a lot of that was the classical side.
Indeed. The original idea of Tipples, the music was very much in the background, and we were at the, call it Peak Cocktail in San Francisco. So it was using jazz as a element of decoration and atmosphere to just drive a busy cocktail bar. That balance is probably balanced out a bit in our current iteration, current life. But originally, it was just a atmosphere and a decoration, for lack of a better term. Mm-hmm. And using a speakeasy vibe, string quartet doesn't ring. Brass band is just a different kind of vibe. And so that jazz, it lent itself so easy. And again, the more we've leaned into it, the more it's responded. So got something small right and then figured out the details.
And you've done it very well. It seems to be a wonderful venue from my perspective, from the one time that I was there. The acoustics are good. The room itself has that right feel, almost the kind of thing you would not only expect, but would want in a jazz venue, to where there's dark colors and there is just a general feel in the room like, yeah, man, this is a happening scene.
And there's something interesting in that none of us were alive in the 1950s in New York to go for all those basement clubs. But that's not relevant because our audience wasn't there either. It is trying to capture what they imagine that to be. And it's someplace intimate, people who are interested, people who are sharing an experience, enlivening that kind of nightlife and just a touch of mystery. Capturing that emotion is more interesting than actually needing to be in a basement, actually needing to be in New York. The emotions behind what that imagination is.
And you've been characterized as being one of the main staples of the clubs in San Francisco. In fact, San Francisco Magazine had rated you as the best jazz club in the city. And I think that speaks very loudly and wonderfully for you.
We'll take that compliment and run with it for sure. I appreciate that people are paying attention and willing to sing the praises. For us, it is joyful that people keep showing up, and it's just provides us with a place to work. If this is showing up to work, is hanging out with a band every night, not a bad place to work.
So, yeah, you've got that right. So how do you feel about it on the jazz scene in San Francisco? Do you truly believe that yourself, that you are one of the best venues that there is to experience the jazz genre?
In the nicest way, the question's flawed. I don't believe there is the best venue almost anywhere, and that the ecosystem is so much more interesting than a singular space. And knowing that there is so many ways to experience this music, so many different evenings to experience this music, that all of them together is what makes it vastly interesting, not just trying to be in, if, for lack of a term, in first place. We try to be a great example and deliver a fantastic experience. And that goes all around of like, can we give good service? Can we make good cocktails? Can we deliver food? Make sure it's hot? Can we have music on stage? But best is such a tall order, mm-hmm. and an uninteresting order as well. Being very good to, you know, medium plus every night is more obtainable and also more interesting. Having just a great Wednesday is rather than being at the pinnacle. And that is such a myopic experience of, the room is supposed to sound good generally everywhere. Right. There's some sweet spots, but we've also like de-emphasized those sweet spots to get the corners to sound a little bit better. Small detail, the room is in mono because it's generally better everywhere. It's not in stereo. And in Canter, like, I don't like listening to records in this room. I don't think that whole room is not designed for that singular, I just want to sit in my favorite chair and just listen. Like, it's not that room. It's pretty good everywhere. It's great nowhere. And our mission is just deliver a consistently good experience. The best is, I think, too tall of an order. And to flip that around, looking at some of the other spaces in San Francisco, specifically, let's look at SF Jazz. Their roster and their calendar is international, including our artists, world-renowned, greatest of the great. and the room sounds better, we have more fun.
There you go.
And so, I mean,
yeah, but you hit on something really important, and that is the collective experience. Just like New York, for example, there are just a ton of jazz venues, but it's the whole idea that each of those contributes to the collective experience of knowing that jazz in New York is going to be good, just like jazz in San Francisco is going to be good, because each of you bring something to the table, albeit each of them are a little bit different than the other, but nonetheless, it's like anywhere where some places they're a small dive hole in the wall kind of place, but man, they've got an incredible sound, and they bring in some great musicians that are there to honor and respect the legacy and the tradition of great music in that city.
Indeed. And that collective whole, I think, is the most interesting. And then we're just splitting hairs on flavors and genres and preferences of, do you like a good view? Do you like a good sound? Do you like a comfortable chair? Do you like food service? Food's so loud, there's people with forks and chewing. Ah, you know, when are those things good or bad? And that just is more of a personal preference. But I think there's space in the whole jazz world and even in every city for all those different things to express. That jazz should be in the concert halls, in the clubs, and on the street corners and busking. Like, there's room for all of that at different price points and different experience levels.
Well, and your focus is, you truly do showcase the Bay Area musicians and regional musicians, with occasionally some of the touring musicians that are on your calendar. But first of all, the Bay Area has some of the most outstanding, outrageous musicians anywhere.
That was one that surprised us, and super grateful because it's now a keystone of the business model. But when we opened, we're like, yeah, we'll have some musicians. We're sure we'll find some around. But the depth of the talent, the original compositions that are coming out of the scene, the depth of the roster is great.
You have some people there that are they regulars, if you will? Like, when we were there last, you had Ray Obieto, who's part of the San Francisco and the Bay Area scene. Is he kind of a regular or someone who is on the calendar frequently?
The big answer is yes. Ray is here often, familiar, knows our room, staff knows him. Tipples has now got the roster large enough, and there's enough external scheduling concerns for us and for the musicians. We have drifted away from a regular calendar. We started having, like, can we just build a month? And then do that month on repeat. And then we're like, wait, we want to have more musicians. So it was 2 months. And then it's 3 months. And then the whole thing is now keeping everybody in a rotation, figuring out what is a good mix for them, their music, their writing schedule, showcasing new music. And then blatantly, like, how consistent is somebody's audience draw? Realizing that we are in the music business and filling seats is an important part. And having our favorite musician here every night is also not the right decision. So as the roster has expanded, unfortunately, frequency of each player has expanded as well. But we're able to showcase more people, more diversity, bigger breadth of genre as well. And reaching further and further out into the edges of what does jazz mean? We're only open 4 nights a week, which is enough to cover our expenses and keep the business afloat. Only 6 bands a week, and then cycling through the roster. So we can showcase the musicians that we feel need a spotlight.
Part of that experience also is the fact that not only do you have the music, but seemingly you pride yourself in craft cocktails and mixology better than most.
It says a lot about just the restaurant background and then about the total experience. To reiterate that again, it is having really good food, really good drinks, really good music. None of them need to excel beyond that. None of them can lag behind. And if you just deliver on all of them, then the whole thing is just a fantastic evening. And that is the biggest takeaway.
Your audiences have truly raved about all of it, including the food. Tell us a little bit about the menu that you offer there, because it seems to be going over very well.
And that is through the Fat Cat, which features dim sum, a Cantonese cuisine.
Yes, this was just a fantastic COVID story. When we were allowed to reopen, we opened fairly early in terms of live music in San Francisco. We're the first venue to reopen with a live audience and live musicians on stage because we're legally a restaurant. To do that, we needed to have food, and we were still at limited capacity. So, like, how do we offer a menu that's we can only do for 20 people? That's not no restaurant can make those numbers work out. So, like, let's just do a pop-up. Let's figure out what kind of pop-up we can do. And then once we figure out what we're gonna do for real when we open up for a full audience, then the pop-up will go away, and then we'll rebrand it. And so the dim sum was always meant as a short-term lean into the flexibilities of what a pop-up can do, which is a short menu, things that can change, things that run out. Like, there's just a whole lot of forgiveness that customers allow of a pop-up that they don't allow a normal full restaurant. And that allowed us a ton of flexibility. And then through that growth, we're like, oh, hey, now they're asking for entrees. Let's put in entrees. Oh, now we need desserts. Let's put in desserts. And we slowly solved all those problems and then realized this is going really well. Maybe we just keep the pop-up. Maybe the pop-up needs its own website and its own branding and has its own A-frame outside so it feels like its own thing in the other room that nobody knows where it's really coming from. And that adds to the whole mystique and mystery of the evening. But the pop-up is our brand, our staff, our idea, our kitchen. So all that is happening kind of from us as well, even though it is designed to look external. The dim sum menu solved a lot of other problems as well. It's naturally casual, naturally family style, meant to share.
Well, it's a great menu, and it's like you were indicating that it's not exactly a massive selections on the menu. You stick with what works and stay within in the box, if you will, rather than trying to stretch yourself thin.
And that, again, for us, the dim sum menu solved a lot of other problems as well. It's naturally casual, naturally family style, meant to share. There's no specials. Everybody's ordering quietly and facilitates listening to more music. So we have figured out how to capture what works in our space, realizing that using the same theme that we have with a respect to the jazz tradition is a respect for the Cantonese tradition and what dim sum is. Mm-hmm. We realize that there's no sense for us trying to make an authentic dim sum house, but also taking that culture and understanding it and giving it as much respect as we can is also important for us.
Let's talk a little bit about your clientele. It's a really diverse mix of the hip, the cool, the young, the old, etc. But you have people that come to Mr. Tipple's just for the food. Some come just for the music and others for the cocktails, or some for all of it.
And realizing that it takes a whole bunch of people to keep a venue and an operation operating, that we're not tied specifically to a tourist clientele or to the office crowd or to a post-show symphony crowd, but it takes a little bit of all of those. And the fact that there is a diversity of audience from age and time and interest, and that creates a room that just feels natural. It feels a part of San Francisco. It feels like it's adding to the beauty of the city without a identity that is specifically tied to something else, and welcoming everybody.
And I take it that all ages are welcome.
Thankfully, being a restaurant, we are all ages all the time, all over. And there's a lot more understanding of all ages and just be a good patron of the arts. Support the business, support the musicians.
It's a great scene with a great vibe and much to offer. And it's called Mr. Tipples. You don't want to miss it if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area.
Thank you for that. I appreciate the kind words.
So in closing, how can people learn more about Mr. Tipples?
Obviously, the website has our calendar, roster, menus, and that's kind of the holder of information. The website pales in interest comparing to just showing up and being in the room where it happens. The best way to learn more is to get here in San Francisco and get you and a friend into the club to experience a night out.
Well, it sounds like you will have all of that and more when you visit Mr. Tipples. And Jay, I can't tell you how wonderful it has been to have a conversation with you about yourself and the club.
Thanks for taking the time to reach out, sharing our little message in our little corner. I'm glad, as I said before, that showing up to work is just having a band there as well. Makes me happy to be here, and we're eager to share that with other people.
Thanks for listening to this episode of All That's Jazz with Jay Bordelot, the owner, creator, and mastermind behind Mr. Tipples Jazz Club in San Francisco.
We'd like to thank Ben Sidran for the use of Mr. P's Shuffle as our theme song.
And visit us again next time for another interesting conversation on All That's Jazz.
If you like today's episode, please leave us a 5-star rating on the streaming service you use. All That's Jazz is available on every major streaming app, including Podbean, Apple Podcast, and Spotify, as well as Facebook and online at allthatsjazz.net.